What's up, everybody? This is episode 18 of the Tucson Pinball Podcast, part two. So part one was the tournament talk down at TPF 2017. So the rest of this is going to be the actual other side of the show, I guess you'd call it. It goes over some of the talks, a lot of the games that were revealed. There's actually two that I think I skipped. One of them because it's not a pinball machine, it's a pitching bat. And then the other one because it's the $12,500 version of Bride of Pinbot. It's a brand new cabinet, new-ish art, probably same mechs, but everything else was kind of redone. And it's being done by Dutch Pinball, and they're in kind of a nightmare situation. They're the ones that are the makers. They are the actually not even the makers, and this is why it's a problem. They have the Big Lebowski, and they've designed it, but they have a contract manufacturer, and there's a large dispute. So there's only been 40 or 50 of those that have been shipped, and there's 40 or 50 more that are ready to go, but that's part of the dispute. So anyways, Bride of Pinbot 2.0 full version, 3.0, Super LE, whatever they're going to call it, I'm not very optimistic about it. So that's a bummer, but let's just get that out of the way because the rest of this talk is full of awesomeness because that's just what TPF was. So anyways, without further ado, here's what I came up with for the second portion of the original podcast for episode 18, but ended up having to split it into two because of the size. So anyways, here we go. There were also plenty of new machines, and they might not be like, this is where we're revealing them, is at Texas Pinball Festival. There was a few of those, but they are new within the last month-ish or so. So let's just go Aerosmith. So Aerosmith plays fast. I think all Sterns play fast just because their flippers are juiced, and they tend to play faster and harder than anything else that I can think of. The art's great, done by Dirty Donnie, and he said he learned a lot doing Metallica, and then coming into Aerosmith, you can tell that there's a little bit more detail to it, and there's a little bit more of the story from the various songs that they used for the modes. It's really cool. The best ball lock from any modern Stern, and potentially any game in the last, I don't even know how long. It's got a trough that when the lock is lit, you put it in the trough or you just shoot it up that straight center shot. And it's got a kicker. It'll open the toy box and it'll shoot the ball into the toy box and then the lid will shut. And then there's a little jester head on the top and that's on a spring. So he kind of like bobs around a little bit. That's really cool. Like, just, it's so visually impressive. And I've already talked about this on a previous podcast, but that sticks out so much. Like, and it's not even hard to lock a ball necessarily because there's a 3-to-6 ball multi-ball on there. And so you can get your locks lit pretty easily. And that's a shot that you can just kind of fumble into. So I think anybody that plays Aerosmith, maybe even if you're not a good player, within your first 5 tries, you should have hit that lock shot. If you're a decent player, you already probably know about Aerosmith, and that's not going to be what drags you in. But like anybody that sees that for the first time is just like, wow, that's really cool. I have not heard anybody say, that shot sucks, man. And don't do that on purpose, because that's not cool either. You will not get brownie points for that. So it shot pretty nice. There was a couple awkward shots. John Borg likes to do this through the pop bumper orbit shot. You'll see it on Data East Star Wars, you'll see it on Kiss, and you'll see it on Aerosmith. It makes things a little tight, and it's I mean the dimensions might not even be any different, but you're just looking at it like, I have to pass by all those skirts on the pop bumpers, and otherwise this is not going to be a good shot. The code seems to be pretty mature. They've had this in work actually before Batman was started, but then with the timing of the anniversary and everything like that, they wanted to release Batman or at least present it at Expo last year because that coincided with the anniversaries. And so Aerosmith got bumped. And so what that means is that, Batman has super immature code and there's definite errors and issues with it. And then Aerosmith playing that for the first time has really mature code at this point. It's not bug-free, it's probably not even finished, but it's so much further along than Metallica was and is that you can tell, you know, if you know that the timelines were flipped, it's obvious. But even just playing the two games, you could sit there and go, oh, Aerosmith is more done than Batman, because it's true. Let's see, the animations, people have talked about the animations being a little bad cartoon, and I think they're fine. It's not, you're not sitting there watching a Pixar movie. It's fine. It's got all the band members, they're moving, and it's realistically their first, well, it's their first one that's not using actual video assets. You know, everything on Batman, there's some graphics, but then it's all clips from the show. Like, Aerosmith is all original art and everything, so that's cool. Let's see, that voice. Ooh, that voice. It's the same guy that did Sparky from Metallica, but the jester is just a little annoying. So, but it's not as bad as on previous streams that I've seen. Like, it's just not as pronounced. So maybe it was just the way the mics were catching the audio. So it wasn't nearly as bad playing it live in a show. Dream On as the wizard mode is still not confirmed, which if they mess that up, they have messed up very dearly, because I mean, seriously, what song would you have for the wizard mode? And it's now shipping. There's locations that are getting it, and Stern doesn't mess around. They show you a game, and you can get it in just a few weeks, typically. So let's see. Let's move on to Dialed In. Dialed In has been shown and presented in the past, but this is the first time I've had a chance to see it in person. It's very bright. It feels just like a bright game, and it's not just the lighting, but the coloring. It's very vivid, and was very pleasing to look at. The skill shot is super cool. It's kind of, it's got, so if you played Lord of the Rings, there's three options, and same thing on World Poker Tour. There's a few options, and what you want to do is time your plunge so that it goes over the option you want, but then you also have to hit the skill shot. So there's kind of two things going on. If you hit the skill shot, it will feed to the upper flipper, which gives you a direct shot at the probably the smoothest upper ramp I've ever shot at, and shooting at it, it's super hard to miss. Like, it's just so butter smooth. Like, there's a magnet just drawing it up, and it reminds me a lot of the upper flipper shot on I just lost the name. The golf one that not teed off. All right, I'm sorry. Super fail. The golf one that Pat Lawler did. It'll come to me later. No Good Gophers. There it is. Great job, podcast guy. And so yeah, it's kind of like No Good Gophers, but if you get past the first like inch or two of that ramp, you will make it all the way around. Like, unless you rattle this shot, I did miss the shot once, I think. But it was nice. It was super clean. Great geometry. Great job, Pat Lawler. Like I said, it shoots really nice. It's a Pat Lawler design, and he's had years to work on this. And it's everything you would expect from Pat Lawler. It's just crammed full of stuff, and there's tons of mechs and all sorts of like diverters and things like that. The phone, which is on that right scoop, and that's how you start your modes and also how you start multiball. It's not nearly as annoying as it used to be. I remember seeing some early streams, and that audio, it's just so much more overpowering when that phone is ringing, and it gets really annoying, because it happens a lot, but on those streams, it was super grating. Playing in person, you can tell that they've updated that a little bit, so that it's not front and center, like, it's blinking, and yes, I know, hit the phone, I got it, I'm trying, I promise, but it's not driving you nuts. Like, it makes you aware without making you insane. And also, what's cool is on that phone, because it's like an iPhone clone type thing, when the screen is green, like, you don't even have to look at it or read anything, because green in pinball means locks / multiball. So when that screen is green, it's saying, hey, your multiball's ready on this shot. And so that's really cool. You don't even have to pay much attention. You catch that out of the corner of your eye, and you're like, boom, multiball's ready. Let's do it. That one is shipping soon. JJP has had, Jersey Jack, has not had the greatest of history in releasing games in a timely manner, but they have said that they have not shown this until it's much further along in development, and that they are almost ready to start shipping. So it was a fun game, and I know Derek enjoyed it quite a bit. The selfie mode is fun. It's, I mean, you know, you look at it, you watch a stream of it, and you're like, okay, that looks kind of lame and almost childish, and I would hope that this grabs a child's attention, but you know what? Three grown adults were standing there like, oh, look, you know, this is going on or that's going on, and then you have, like, the disaster things going on, like you have an asteroid thing crash into Earth, and it's like, oh wait, there's real, like, you know, kind of video game type stuff in here too, you know, just the concepts that were going on. It's not emojis and selfies all day long. That's just a one aspect of the game, but it makes it fun, you know. It kind of breaks that tension of, oh, there's acid rain, save the city, and oh, hey, look, there's an emoji attack by this hacker, or, you know, whatever the story is. But it was fun. It's cool. I hope to play that one again. You know, I hope that I don't have to go to shows in order to play that, because that's how often I would like to play that game. So then we walked over. This is not chronological, but this is kind of how the story's going to go. There were three alien machines. One of them, I found out later, had the glass shattered in shipping, and that's a wide body. And so hopefully at a pinball show, they were able to finally find a sheet of glass, but that doesn't mean that they had it readily available, because they had to vacuum out that machine. And having had a glass piece shatter for me in transit, I know exactly how they feel. I have Attack from Mars almost completely stripped on the top side of the playfield, and there is still a handful of glass that has been loosened up in all these various nooks and crannies now. And it's just like, oh my goodness, I thought I had pretty much all of this gone. But no, so I can only imagine how long it took them to clean that out and everything. There was a single line for three machines. Eventually they had all three up and running. Every now and then one would go down for tech work, but these are basically sample machines, and you know, there's only one way to find out what's going to break and what's not going to break, you know, and where your bugs are, and that's to have it played. And so that's what happened. It got played a lot. That line was never short, but it was never too lengthy of a line. So anyways, back to the actual game. The visuals, the sound, the video cues, those are all great. Like, it's a very immersive experience. There's a lot of shots. There's four flippers on that game, so they have lots of geometry to work with, especially since it's a wide body. And I would say, think of Twilight Zone, except not nearly as narrow of a shot alley. Like, I look at Twilight Zone, and that actually is kind of a narrow shot, because what you have to the right of that camera pop bumper area and what's to the left of the jackpot, like that's actually a pretty narrow strip, but your upper flippers give you access to other things. And I think that Alien is a little bit more open, but it felt a lot like Twilight Zone, which also meant that it was a little floaty at times. And the most frustrating thing was the main mech, main toy on that game is the Xenomorph head, and it has one of the coolest ball locks that I can think of. You know, this, how awesome is this? We've got Aerosmith with like this super awesome like popping shot, and then we have this Xenomorph that when you qualify the lock and then you hit that shot, there's a magnet right there that'll grab the ball, the head will open, this mechanical, like the little mouth, whatever that's technically called, comes out, grabs the ball, and brings it back inside the head. So basically it eats the ball in the span of like 2 or 3 seconds. And that's really cool. Unfortunately, I didn't get to see that in person, because I don't know how many times you have to hit that thing. I swear I hit that shot at least 5 times. And it's like, just lock the ball. I don't care what anything else happens. I will take away negative points. Just lock the ball. I just want to see it. That's all I want to see. But I didn't make that happen. And, you know, it is what it is. And they might change that. I don't know. But that's not a complaint that only I have. That's something that I've heard from lots of people, and I'm sure they will adjust to appeal to the largest audience possible. So the flippers, like we talk about, Stern just has super juiced flippers. The flippers on Alien were not super strong. They weren't as bad as how the Big Lebowski had been last year when I played it at Texas. When I went and played it at Pinburg, the Big Lebowski, The flippers were fine. So I think they had lowered them to try to not make things break as easy. But if you can't make the two ramps in Big Lebowski, then what's the point? You know, if you can't make all the shots, then the flippers are too weak. So fix it. Let's see. So yeah, because of the flippers, you kind of had to be a little bit more accurate. Like, obviously, if you rattle a shot, it's not going anywhere. But I felt that on some of the shots, you had to hit them super clean in order for it to have a chance of making it. And even then, felt like it would go up ramp, and then it's like, oh, just kidding. But at that point, I was like, you know what? Let's just hit these two targets for the head, and we'll see if we can get multi-ball going, or at least lock a ball. And either way, I mean, this is, I don't want to say it's a polarizing game, but people either, they'll admit that you either like it or you don't like it. And people are not like, they're not halfway. They're like, yeah, I'd like to play it a few more times. I played it once and not the biggest fan. I don't know. It feels too floaty and a little disappointed in that lock shot. So is that fixable? I don't know. Will it grow on me? Maybe, probably. It's pinball, so it's better than work, right? So currently Highway Pinball is in what I would term LRIP is what we call it. It's low rate initial production. So they make like one a week, and then three a week, and then six a week, and then make three more the next week. You know, they're still trying to figure out their production efficiencies and try to get into that just crank them out mode. And I'm sure they'll get there. Houdini. So American Pinball is a new company, and they showed a play field with all the mechs and whatnot, but it wasn't in a cabinet at Chicago Expo in October of 2016. It was basically just a series of things, and lights blinked, and you couldn't play the game because it wasn't set up. So since then, they've completely scrapped both the art and the layout of that, and then have been working really hard to get this machine to you. And it shows. I actually really like the old art, and I wish that artist would have been able to be used for the new version, but the new art looks a little bit more, it's not photorealistic, but it's not quite as cartoony as the old art was. Not to say the old art was like strictly cartoon stuff, but it was, I just like the way it felt. I like the colors. I like the way the colors just kind of, it was good pinball art. You could tell it was good pinball art. And so anyway, but the new art, not bad. Not bad at all. So I heard two main things that were getting talked about on that game. I heard, oh, wow, there's lots of cool trinkets and bits and bobs and whatever. Like, they have chains going from, like, they're hanging from ramps and stuff like that. And then they have each one of the pop bumpers has, like, a like an eye bolt kind of thing, and there's a chain looped on that, and so every time you hit the pop bumper, that whole thing would come down and like the chain would end up moving and stuff, and that's a pretty big part of the Houdini mystique is being chained and getting out of chains and, you know, in dunk tanks and everywhere. Like, he's always just locked up, right? So chains are a pretty big visual aspect on that, but it's also a cool feature to have on there, and they used those various things in a pretty cool way. Let's see. The other thing I was hearing about is if you're looking at the playfield, there's a right loop, but then there's a shot just to the left of that. And I want to know how much wider that shot is than a standard pinball. Because if you look at it, you're like, are you sure a ball fits there? You know, it's like, holy crap, that has to be the tightest shot I think I've ever seen. And some people are having issues with it. I actually had more of an issue with, there's a shot on the left side, and it kind of, it's got a really, the two ball guides, they taper in really quickly. And so what that causes, like, the opening is really big, but it tapers down to that narrower, just barely wider than a pinball width. It tapers down pretty quickly. And so you don't get glancing shots that end up making it through. If you hit that taper area, it ends up rejecting and rattling. So if that was smoothed out just a little bit more, I think that would be a more accepting shot. But I actually found that rejecting more so than this tight shot on the game that Derek and I played. So on this game, that super tight shot, it feeds around back. And let's see, what's it kind of like? I don't know. I can't really think of a good way to describe it, but it's kind of like the vanish shot on Theater of Magic. Like, if you make it, so yeah, you qualify vanish, and then you just kind of get it around, and then it'll drop behind. But on this, on Houdini, there's a diverter, because it will send it to another area if you don't have your locks qualified. But if you do have your locks qualified, I feel like I'm kind of lying to everybody now because I've already said Aerosmith has one of the coolest shots. I think Aerosmith has the best lock shot of any modern Stern. I think the Xenomorph head on Alien is a lock shot that feature almost writes itself. And it's really well executed in the fact that it exists. They have it. It's hard to do, but it as far as the alien theme, like that is a very good visual and it's a very good representation of that theme. Houdini doesn't have anything to do with catapults, as far as I know. But if you've played Medieval Madness or Taxi and you have that catapult on the left side, that's one of the ways to, well, that's how you lock balls for one of the multi-balls. So what happens is you shoot that really narrow shot on the right side and it goes around and it feeds into this catapult and it shoots it through the air into a box that is opened on like the back wall of the play field. And it's amazing. It's absolutely, it, like the first time I looked at it, I was like, wait, there's a catapult there, but there's no wire form. So, you know, maybe they don't have that part put in yet. Guess what? You qualify a lock, you shoot that shot, and oh my goodness, it just shot the ball halfway up the play field in the air. And more often than not, it was making it into the box. It did miss a time or two from what I hear, but when I hit it, it went into the box, went through the air, not a problem, and I'm hooked. I'm just like, that is, you want not even like a gimmick, but you want just an awesome concept. That's it. I wonder how many plays it'll take before something breaks. but, oh my goodness. You want to talk about the one item that stole the entire show for me? It is the Houdini lock shot. And I have no idea where you can find video to see it. I have no idea, but you have to find it out because it's so cool. Let's see. So anyways, that catapult. Oh my goodness. So overall, it's still in work. They came to TPF and they had announced that, hey, we're going to have two Houdini machines there and it's still in work. And so like the programmer was there pretty much the entire time. Like the guys from the company were there. They were taking notes. They were doing just like what Charlie and Dave did from Spooky Pinball last year on Rob Zombie. Like they were standing there watching everything. And the guy that's programming Houdini, he's already made two homebrew games. He's familiar with the platform. He was doing things on the fly, and they had a few issues that they were working on throughout the show. But and they've already acknowledged that. They said, you know, the show has been a great help. We've been able to find some of the bugs. We know what people were experiencing more often than others. You know, so these are the major issues that we're going to focus on now, and then these will also be addressed. But like, they just had a complete roadmap. And these two games, even though one of them, I think it killed a fuse that was at least controlling the trough because it wouldn't kick out a ball. It killed this fuse on ball three of player two of this two-player group that was ahead of me in line. And so I'm just like, oh, I'm not going to get to play this game without standing in that other line. And so that was kind of a bummer, but I'm like, you know what? There's plenty to do here. I'm going to go walk around, do some other stuff, and then I'll come back. I'll play this game before it's over. I'm so glad I did because that, out of all the games, this was the one I enjoyed the most. I played one game. I was able to understand a few of the rules right off the bat because the LCD screen was showing explanations and kind of helping you along. And it was just a fun game. Some people thought it was really hard to shoot. I would agree there are some tough shots, but it's not the one you're thinking. So anyways, that's Houdini. Houdini's really cool. They're still in development, but they've said that they are hoping to start shipping by the second half of 2017. And I believe them because these are the folks that built Magic Girl for John Papaduik. J-Pop, whatever his name. John Papaduik. Papa Duke, whatever it is, J-Pop. You just don't even want to know that story. But they're the ones that did it. They know what they're doing, and they have a manufacturing background from a different industry, so I'm not super concerned there. I'm very excited for Houdini to be out in the wild at some point. So the one game that was getting the most buzz before the show was Attack from Mars Remake. So AFMR, as people are referring to it, It was revealed at the Amoa show. I think it was Amoa, and that's an amusement show. And that was also going on in Dallas, but that was the previous week. And so Attack from Mars Remake had been revealed the previous week. People got to play it. They had, I think, all three models were on display and everything. They had a full feature list and everything, but they did not have any information about pricing. And that was one of those discussions that people were just like, oh, it's going to be 8K just like Medieval Madness. Oh, no, it's going to be like 8,500 because it's, you know, time has passed. And so things are more expensive now, you know, just everything. And then there's other guys that are like, no way, man, there's like nothing on that playfield. It should be like 5,500 Crush Stern, you know, like. And you know, I'm most of the way through an Attack from Mars playfield teardown right now. There's not as little on there as people think. Like, there's still a lot there. It's not as complex as like some Pat Lawler games, but, you know, come on. There's lots there. So anyways, nobody knew what the pricing was going to be, and they had come out and said, we're going to reveal it at the show at Texas Pinball Festival. And so I think that was one of the first things I did when the main show opened up, is I walked over to where these three machines were and I was looking at the price. And it's like 6,500, 7,300, and then 8K, I think, for the LE. And shipping is not included on any of that. Like, Stern includes shipping. Some companies do, some companies don't. So that's all plus shipping, which they said is going to be capped at like $300. So that's really not bad. You know, in the world of new pinball machines, that's really not bad. That it's still not cheap, but you know what? There's new Attack from Mars machines getting made. And how cool is that? So I think it's cool. Some people are like, oh, don't remake stuff. Focus your energy on bringing out new machines. It's like, well, okay, that's great and all, but were you at Texas Pinball Festival? Did you not see how many other new games there are? Like, it's an awesome time to see pinball going on, because there's just so much there. So there's three different tiers, and what that gets you is three different feature sets, because the gameplay is identical on all three games, and sometimes that is the case on tiered models where you have a pro premium LE from Stern, for example. They oftentimes change gameplay things as well, because, like, for example, on Aerosmith, the pro does not have that upper playfield area that the premium and LE does. And so that changes the gameplay. And Game of Thrones, perfect example. That upper playfield on the premium and LE is nowhere to be found on the pro, and that makes those games almost two completely different games. But Attack from Mars Remake is going to be the same exact game, all three models, and it's also the same exact game that is in lots of people's collections and locations. You know, if you've played it before, you will, you know, experience the same exact stuff. It's just going to be brand new. There's going to be all LEDs, and there's different, like, display sizes, and they did the color, the color dots again. And, I mean, it's a very nice package. It's very well presented. That topper looks pretty cool, actually. I'm not a topper person whatsoever, but the topper on the LE has a 3D statue, essentially, of the Martian, and I think the Martian character is one of the coolest in pinball. It's so cool, and it's got a similar pose, I guess you would say, to the guys that are on the playfield, and so I think that's really cool. Couple days after we got back, I checked and on the forum thread, and there was, you know, a couple distributors that were like, I only have one LE left, I have two LEs left, and then a couple guys were like, they're tearing through these things, and they're offering 1,000 of them, which sounds like a lot for quote-unquote limited edition, but there's a lot of distributors that are like, I'm already out of my allotment, so these things are selling very well, they expect to be shipping them in May. And that's very exciting that one of the all-time greats is being remade, and they're being shipped out here in the next few months. The last new quote-unquote manufacturer that I went to check out was P3, and P3 Multimorphic has the machines that are the lower two-thirds is an LCD, but it's a touchscreen, so it can track the ball. Like, you can put targets just out in space. And then the upper playfield area, the upper third, is a replaceable or swappable, not, I shouldn't say replaceable, but it's a swappable mechanical assembly, and you can, like, people can make their own games on it. They have some full-featured games, and then they have some just super simple, like, kiddie games where it's, like, hit these targets, and it's, like, a cannonball thing, or they had, I didn't even count, between 6 and 8 machines, maybe, and almost each one of them was set up to play a different game. And that's the thing about P3, is that it's designed so that you can, it's almost like if MAME pinball, you know, those virtual pinball cabinets that you can, you know, you've got a TV screen or two on there, and you can just plug in as many pinball machines as you want because it's all just going on a computer anyways. This is the conversion or the junction between MAME virtual pinball and real pinball, because it has pretty much both aspects. You've got real flippers, you've got a real ball, you've got real physics, everything is real. It just happens to be on top of an LCD screen. And they've been able to do some pretty cool stuff. I didn't get to play any of them because when they were all up and running, it was kind of early in the show and I was trying to get through tickets in the tournament, so I was kind of focused on that area. Later in the show, there was a few machines had gone down, and as the show was kind of winding down, you know, you could, it's a lot of work to keep and one per, you know, prototype machine running. They had 6 of them. I'm not really faulting them. They're just now getting into the assembly of these things for actual production. So they'll work everything out. Looks like a lot of people had fun. I just didn't get to catch it. It's all good. Yeah, so those, they've updated prior to the show that they're prepping for Fab, and they're almost ready to go. So, wow, we are almost at an hour, and I have just a little bit left. I have the custom area. There's a row of custom machines, and then I have a couple of the talks that I went to. So let's go into the custom row, and I'm actually kind of disappointed in myself because I didn't play all the machines on this row. I wanted to play each and every one of them, and sometimes the lines were just non-existent. Like, I walked up to the first one we'll talk about. I walked up to the first one and I knew about it. Everybody knows about it. If you're kind of into what's going on in pinball and kind of the hobbyist side of things as well, everybody has seen Jack Danger's of Deadflip, Jack Danger's stream of Total Annihilation. And it's super cool. It's done by Scott Denisi, who, if you do the Tucson Pinball League, that's how we used to do the scorekeeping before I wrote the spreadsheet that tracks more things. But yeah, Scott Denisi wrote that tournament pinball program. I don't even know. It's Tournament Pinball Manager or something like that. But he wrote that, and that's a really cool tool. And he works for Pinball Life, but he also is he's an inventor of sorts, and he did this machine. It's a single level, which means there's no ramps, there's no upper play fields. It's a single level, and it's almost like it's split into two sections. So you have your skill shot has 3 in lanes, and there's gates across the upper area, and it'll send the ball all the way around the orbit, and I'm sure it can control, like, if you shoot a shot and it wants it to go to the upper play field, it can put it there intentionally as well. But what you want to do, and I found it to be actually really hard, was you wanted to hit one of the 3 upper lanes for your skill shot in order to drop it into that upper play field. And there's just slingshots everywhere. There's a flipper up there. There's a scoop at the bottom. So, like, if you're quote unquote to drain, it would go into the scoop and then it would get kicked out of that scoop that's in, like, the center of the play field that puts you down in kind of the lower play field area. There's an LCD display, but there's also alphanumeric display. So, like, Funhouse, Taxi, Diner, you know, those are alphanumerics. It has a couple of those as well. And so you've got 2 different things going on, and it's kind of cool. It was a complete white wood, meaning there's no art whatsoever. And even, like, the points or the titles for the different inserts were Sharpied on there. Like, that's how early it is, but it is so well developed as far as gameplay and layout goes. It was a lot of fun to play. The lock shots, they're, once you qualify them, they're an inline drop target bank. So you've got 3 drop targets. You shoot the first ball up there and the top drop pops up and it takes it. And then you do that again and then the next one takes it. And it doesn't let that one that you've just hit, like, it won't let that go down. Like, you'll hit it, but it'll recognize that and pop it back up before the ball can roll past it. So it'll keep those locks for you. Really cool. And yeah, I didn't get to see the stream, which is funny because I was like, everybody's seen the stream, everybody but me. Because I've seen the pictures, I've kind of been watching as it develops, and that's one of the things I wanted to check out before I got to Texas to kind of get familiar with the game. I didn't get there yet, but it's all good. There were spinners on there. There was just the slingshots were shooting the ball all around like crazy. It was just super cool. So Total Annihilation, Scott DeNisi crushed it. Let's see, Doom. Doom is another homebrew machine, and I've kind of been watching as this thing has been made. So I've seen pictures, and they took it. I think they took it to Expo in last October. It has some of the fastest inlanes probably ever, because instead of the ball going on a ramp and then eventually coming straight down into the inlane and then like running into the end of that rail and then dropping down through a hole, they have these big sweeping rails that go in line with the slope of the flipper, and there's no end to that rail. It just drops off. So imagine you're playing high speed and the slingshot or the catapult, it shoots the ball back and it feeds to that. It's not even an inlane, but feeds in front of the slingshot. Imagine that, except it's coming in line with the flipper and you need to flip or that thing's going bye-bye. So that's super cool. I love the geometry, like just visually. I mean, the concept is really cool, but then you have to pull it off and make it not look like a turd. And this thing, like, it's so presentable. It's so cool looking. Super bummed that I didn't get to play this thing. There were also two Buffy the Vampire Slayer machines. And this has been a project that's been going on for a while. And it's, from what I understand, it's three guys. And they took Swords of Fury machines and they rethemed them. But then they also rewrote all the rules. And there's a display in there. Like, it's nothing like the original machine. And there's two of them there, and they're working on a third one, and that's because each one of these people that is making it wants one, so that's what they're doing. So, very cool project, and again, didn't get to play that one, pretty bummed. So, Wizard Blocks was the last one on that row, and Wizard Blocks, if you know what Revenge from Mars or Star Wars Episode 1 is, then you know the platform that Wizard Blocks is on. It's the Pin2K platform, so it's got that big TV that projects down onto the actual glass of the playfield, and then they have targets that are not lit up, so you're actually seeing like a projected alien or whatever, and then when you hit it, like he explodes on the screen, but you've actually just hit like a stand-up target that you're not really seeing. So that's kind of how they correlated those. Wizard Blocks was a Pat Lawler design that was going on the Pin2K platform before they shut everything down. And there's a guy that has kind of picked this up, and he's generated the CAD file, and he's got the layout, and he's got some stuff like from the original files, and then some of the stuff he's had to create on his own, and he's putting together Wizard Blocks, he's programming it. It's a very cool effort. I've seen the art on it, and it's amazing. Like, it looks really cool. But because of the backstory it has, like, people, if they know what it is, they recognize it right away, and they're just like, oh my goodness, I'm staring at a Wizard Blocks. You know, it's like, it's almost one of those legendary things. It's kind of like what Cactus Canyon is, because Cactus Canyon is notorious for not being complete, because that was a game that was in production, and they just were like, okay, we're done, and we're not supporting it anymore. And it's like, but wait, it's not done. So that's why Cactus Canyon continues as such a big deal as an afterthought, that sounds kind of mean, but like an after the fact project that's going on in the modern time to finish a game that in the late 90s didn't get that finish that it deserves. So there was a Wizard Blocks there. Again, super bummed I didn't get to play it, because who knows if I'm ever going to see that one. But it's so awesome that it was there and people got a chance to play it, because you want to talk about just like pinball lore and pinball history and things that you would think that once you learn about them, it's like, hey, that's awesome. Too bad you're never going to see it, because it basically doesn't exist. But Wizard Blocks does, because somebody's putting in a lot of effort. So there were talks going on in the conference area almost the entire time, and I went to a few of them. And the first one I went to on the schedule was the Elvira one, and it was Elvira, Greg Freres, and Dennis Nordman, and those two gentlemen are the designer and the artist for Elvira and the Party Monsters, and Scared Stiff. And when this talk was shown on the schedule, like when it finally popped up on the schedule, people were like, is there an Elvira pin coming out? You know, people were like I was expecting, as we were driving out to Texas, I'm talking to Dave and Derek, and I'm like, I am expecting them to have a game under the curtain. They're going to rip off the curtain and they're going to be like, boom, Elvira 3. You know, whatever the title is, whatever the layout is, whatever is, right? So I was a little disappointed when I went to the talk and they didn't have like a machine just kind of in the corner under a curtain. They did a recap of, and they showed pictures and videos, and it was really cool. It was really nice to have them kind of revisit that. But they did a recap of the making and designing of Elvira and the Party Monsters, and then they did the same thing with Scared Stiff. And it was really cool just to see like original art and things like that and early layouts and Whitewoods. And it was just, it was cool, you know, from a homebrew perspective, you can see like how it was done, quote unquote, in the industry. And it's just, it's really cool to see pinballs, how they're made. I think that's cool. I think that's fun. But it took until the Q&A session for somebody to go, so y'all making a pin? and they kind of were like, you know, like kind of teasing a little bit. And then eventually they were like, yes, there is an Elvira pin is coming out. And we have been working on it for about 4 months or so. And so, yes, it is coming. Stern is going to be making it. And so that makes me think, because these are the two guys that did Wonelli, Big Juicy Melons. And that design was also used for the Pabst Blue Ribbon Can Crusher pinball machine. So, and they did that game under the Whiz Bang title, even though Greg is the art director at Stern Pinball, but Dennis is a total freelance designer at this point. So this was just kind of a passion project for them, and Stern ended up making it. So it's like, you know, when you see the guys there, it's like, oh, well, Elvira 3 is going to be a Whiz Bang, and who's going to make it? But no, it's actually what they said is that it's going to be a Stern title. And so that's cool. That's what it is. The other thing I went to was the presentation of a documentary called Things That Go Bump in the Night. It's the documentary that Joel and Dana Reeves did for Spooky Pinball. And they have interviews, and they go to Benton, and they show a lot of cool stuff. I think it was a little over an hour long, maybe, the actual documentary. And it's basically their Spooky's origin story up until just a little bit after Domino's was released and shown and everything. So it's a good chunk of time that is covered in this documentary. There's a lot of really cool interviews. The town president of Benton is just a super cool dude. He's got a couple interview segments in there. He's just a funny guy. You know, he's probably somebody's really cool grandpa, and that was very entertaining. Brian Kelly's in there, and he's got quite the personality and the mouth. So everything's bleeped out, you know, so it's very, very presentable for all ages, but it's still Brian Kelly, and it's funny. And so if and when you watch this, you have to watch until the credits are kind of rolling, because there's some Easter eggs at the very end of the credits as well. And it was very fun to watch. I'm a big fan of Spooky, and, you know, that's kind of, you know, that was one of the things I was really looking forward to. Oh, shoot, I didn't put Jetsons on here. See, I've been doing these notes for how long, and I didn't put Jetsons on there. Here's going to be the really short Cliff Notes version of that. if you've seen The Princess Bride, what's the line that he goes? You know, there's something, and they need to, like, update him. He's like, here's a story. He's like, No, here's too much. Here's the summary or something like that. It's just, it's a funny part of that movie. But anyways, it's like, let's not go over the entire thing in Jetsons. Let's just give you the summary. So the summary is, it is designed to be less depth than most machines. It's more simplistic. That doesn't mean it's simple. It's more simplistic. And if that's what they were shooting for, they nailed it. It's not, there's one ramp. It's not a crazy layout. There's not a whole lot of mechs going on. There's a lot of stand-up targets and a lot of lanes and whatnot. So that just means lower maintenance for the home user, because that's what this is targeted at. And I shot it a couple times. I thought the flippers were a little elevated, and so the outer shots were a little challenging, but I was still able to hit everything after I got the feel for it. So it wasn't that bad, but the art's really good. The callouts are okay. I think the animation could use a little bit more touch up along with some of the callouts, but you know, all in all, it's doing exactly what they intended it to do. And it's not a spooky design anyways. It's a contract game. Somebody else designed it. They have the license for it. They're responsible for selling it. Spooky is just making it. It was at their booth though, and so I played it a couple times. It was a fun game. Pinball's still fun, but it's not one of the, it's not like a Lord of the Rings, you know? It's not a Keith Johnson, let's go super deep and like tunnel through the earth with the rules. So, but it was still there. It was cool. Did not get to play dominoes because that line was a little long when I actually had time to walk around. Did not need to play Rob Zombie because D&D now has their Rob Zombie. So anyways, back to things that go bump in the night. So the documentary is over, and then the Joel and Dana come back up on stage, and they're joined by the spooky crew that had driven down from Wisconsin. And so there's some chit chat and everything, because people were speculating that Spooky was going to announce their actual game number 3. But Charlie on the last couple podcasts has said, no, we're not going down there with that anticipation. So it turns out, and this was a Saturday night presentation, it turns out that on Sunday there was going to be an event that was forcing Spooky's hand. And that is because Alice Cooper was having a charity golf tournament on Sunday, and translites were going to be available as whether there are handouts or prizes or, you know, fundraising aspects of that charity tournament, who knows, but there was also going to be a pinball machine awarded. And so Spooky was kind of forced into displaying a minute and a half video, and all they showed was the back glass art, and then they talked about various things of it, and Alice Cooper did some voiceover work on the presentation of that video. Sorry. And that was really cool. And so it is Spooky's game number 3 is Alice Cooper's Nightmare Castle. It's going to have 10 tracks. It's not going to be a greatest hits thing. And Charlie has come out and said, this is not a rock band theme. This is a game that is inside the world of Alice Cooper. So the theatrics, and there's going to be mechs and cool stuff on there. And Charlie has said in the past that they're throwing everything at this game. I'm not expecting a kitchen sink to be in the game, but I wouldn't be shocked, because I'm sure Alice has used a kitchen sink on stage as a prop at some point. So who knows? But the art looks pretty cool. It's very pinball art. So it's kind of cartoony, but it's still like realistic ish. Like it's, I hope there's a term for that. And I wish, maybe I should research that a little bit, but whatever that is, like, it is pinball art. And so I'm looking forward to seeing the rest of it. I'm looking forward to seeing what comes up. And so yeah, there was 2 pinball machines announced. There were several shown for the either the first time or first time that I had seen them with it, because they've only been around for a few months as far as like prototypes and show machines. And there's a lot that's packed into what is essentially 2-ish full days in Texas. And if you did not get the chance to go, I can't say that future years are going to show 5 machines a year, but the free play area, the talks, the tournament, there will be, it's turning into the trade show. So there will be games shown at Texas, I would have to imagine, like every single year, that people are just, instead of planning on Expo in October to show a game, if they're in the other 6-month cycle, then they're just going to be like, well, you know what, let's get it awesome and let's take it to Texas. And it was a great show. It's a lot of driving. It's well worth it. The biggest disappointment about driving is we did not bring a game home. Ah. So yeah, that was one of the goals based on last year, but I just don't think there was as much for sale. And I was talking to Derek and Dave and even Ben and Dave V, and it's like, have you guys seen much for sale? And it's like, no, not like last year. So there just wasn't a whole bunch out there. And so that was most of the reason why, because some of the guys were definitely looking. They were definitely looking, but this was just not the year where there's four Demo Man games for sale next to like 100 other machines that are for sale. But this year was for playing and for having a lot of fun, and we did just that. And so thank you for listening to an hour and almost 15 minutes of the Tucson Pinball Podcast. Again, thank you very much. Hopefully we'll see you in Texas, and if nothing else, we'll see you in Arizona. And that's about it, so party on.
Party on, Wayne.
Party on, Garth.
It's Wayne's World. Wayne's World.